From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. When we talk about America's strong economy, there's often an unspoken assumption about who's benefiting most, namely America's booming cities and metro areas. Flip side to that presumption, small towns are hurting. Well, that is true in some places, but in some small towns, perhaps more than presumed, they are bucking that trend. They're experiencing a renaissance of their own. Great neighborhoods, affordable housing, no commute, a pace and quality of life that's drawing in entrepreneurs, artists, and young college grads. In other words, these small towns are experiencing a brain gain. So what are they doing right? This hour on Point, the conclusion of our special series, Where We Call Home, Life in Small Town America. And you can join us. Do you live in a small town? What do you love about it or not? Are you thinking about moving to a small town? And if so, why? And is your small town one of those places that's actually growing, experiencing a brain gain? Or is it struggling? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me today from St. Paul, Minnesota, is Benjamin Winchester, sociologist who's documenting the rural brain gain at the University of Minnesota Extension School. He's a former staffer at the Center for Small Towns at the University of Minnesota Morris. Ben Winchester, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Magna.
So first of all, tell us, I mean, I'm seeing some numbers here broadly, say from the Pew Center that did a study not that long ago that said that overall in rural areas of the United States, there hasn't been that much growth. There hasn't been that much population loss. So how would you characterize the health and state of small town America overall?
Right. I'd say steady and stable. I mean, there have been a lot of changes that we've witnessed in our rural communities over the past, you know, even 100 years. We've got people living in our small towns today that remember when, you know, we had larger businesses in town or filled main streets. And a lot of times that can direct the narrative that people have about how they not just describe their town, but how they describe rural areas in general. But overall, what we have found is there has been pretty consistent growth and stability in the population, the rural population. And it's really been driven by a number of factors that we can talk about here. But kind of when we're looking at changes in our rural communities, we need to better understand, like, you know, what has happened to our urban communities in many ways. They are directly related to one another. Many times rural is not something that people define by themselves, but rural is a residual category. So essentially things that are not urban are considered rural in a way. The urban ecology schools of Chicago in the early 1900s really started to define what this urbanity meant, kind of around impersonal relationships and high population density. And then, of course, anything that didn't have that was rural. So It became kind of this dichotomy in a sense. And the Census Bureau uses that today. I mean, when we've got populations of 50,000 or more in an urban area or 2,500 or more in an urban cluster, they're considered urban. And essentially everything outside of that is then considered rural.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So just for clarity's sake, of the definition that I was using was largely one of communities of 10,000 people or fewer. I mean, so is that not an accurate? I mean, what is the?
Yeah, there's.
So maybe I should ask, what is the best way for us to define what a small town is in America today?
Well, I mean, there's folks in New York who think the whole state of Iowa is rural, and everybody in Des Moines is just, you know, they're living in a rural place, and it's all.
We're,
you know,
not going to use New Yorkers' definition for the rest of America, though.
Right? No, but it's very much relative speaking when you talk to an individual. But at the policy level, at the data analysis level, we need to do something. So the Census Bureau has had some pretty standard definitions over the years. A lot of it has to do with, you know, population density. But as well as kind of the outlying areas, and we see this with the suburbs, is anytime you've got an economic relationship with an outlying area, they tend to be encompassed inside this urbanized area too. So we see these metropolitan statistical areas being generated across the country, and they've really grown quite a bit. So, I mean, we're in the Twin Cities metro area here, and, you know, 40 years ago, we used to talk about the 7-county metro area. And today, it's not 7 counties, it's 14, it's 16 counties. So in many ways, I say that it's not that people have been, attaining urban status. Like, they don't want urbanity, they want rurality. And it's the whole reason why the suburbs were born in the first place. It's not because people wanted to live in the high-dense areas. They essentially said, this is too dense, and we're going to move out. So they would move out to the suburbs. Right. And we saw that in the 40s, 50s, this concentric ring growth. And now, you know, in the 80s and 90s, we start to see second ring growth, because people more like, well, I want to live out. I don't want to live in the core city. So they move, they look at the suburbs. They're like, well, these are, you know, urban. So essentially they move out another, another county, and we start to encompass these. So, you know, even in the U.S. here, I think a full 20% of all the counties in the country have been reclassified from rural to urban since 1974.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so the reason why we're delighted to have you on the show today, Benjamin, is that, you know, we kind of want to explore this question of whether or not, or whether the media tends to get the truth about life in small towns in America wrong now. Because, the, as you know, there are these narratives of all the economic boom is happening in American metro areas, as I said at the top of the show, and that small towns are struggling. There's the depopulation story, shuttering of Main Street stores, you know, the opioid epidemic, you name it. And it, the national narrative seems to be that the small towns are getting the brunt of the challenges that the nation's facing. But you say that's not true. So why? Push back against those narratives.
Yeah, I would say it's not just that. Essentially, the narrative, and I argue this in all the research that we do, is essentially we've got this negative narrative about rural communities that's based on the past. It's based on what we, you know, where we were, where we should have been, where we could have been. All the stories about the lost promises of our towns that are, still hold true in our communities, where, you know, we could have had 3M in our small town if we had to just rezone that land north of town. And, you know, in many ways, we hear this kind of narrative because I believe people in our small towns don't believe they are where they should be. We have gone through dramatic changes in our rural communities. We've witnessed the mechanization of agriculture in the early 1900s, which led to a massive depopulation because essentially your 4 to 6 kids no longer had a job on the farm, so they would move to the city. And then in the 50s, 60s, we, you know, a really kind way of saying businesses closed is we had an economic restructuring. And so, and we still witness this today where you lose your apothecary, you lose your hardware store, you lose your grocery store. And I think a lot of times when you live in these small towns and you have to close your hardware store, you close your grocery store, it's probably your only one. And now you have to drive past that grocery store every day and remind yourself of what this town has lost. Well, I want to say, too, that, you know, every time you hear of a hardware store closing in a small town or one or a grocery store, that there's one closed in that there's one that closed in the major metropolitan area, too. This is not a distinctly rural trend that your business is closed. This is part of being in the world. This is part of globalization, and it impacts everywhere.
Isn't the impact in a smaller town disproportionately larger than in an urban area when those locally owned businesses close down?
Yeah, definitely. As we lose local ownership, we did witness this in the big box retailer trends of the 80s and 90s, too, is we lost control over ownership. And so we've lost control over profits. We've lost control over a number of aspects of the commercial sector within our small towns.
So we have the mechanization of agriculture, as you're talking about, economic restructuring more broadly. These are sounding like trends over the past century that have been to the detriment of small towns. But you're saying, though, your deeper thesis is that, on the other hand, in some places, in some of these more rural districts, that the phrase I've been using, brain gain, we actually got from you. that they're attractive places for people to live in, and they are pulling people in. What's going on in those small towns?
Yeah, so essentially the part of the explanation I just had is saying, you know, how was this narrative created? It's created because we have gone through these dramatic negative changes in our small town. School consolidations, too, are losing their hospitals and clinics. But what we found then in our early research, and this isn't even new, is that there's been a general trend of people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s moving to just about every rural county in the country. And, you know, a lot of the language around migration in our small towns is about the loss of our young people, our 18 to 21-year-olds. They graduate from high school and they move away. And this is deemed a huge problem for our towns. It's essentially a failure. And we, you know, there's a book out there called Hollowing Out the Middle. And essentially the proclamation is that our towns are being hollowed out when we let our kids leave. But, you know, what are you going to tell an 18-year-old what to do? I mean, that's going to be a very difficult situation you find yourself in. But what we like to remind people is you should be talking positively about your towns because you want somewhere for your kids to come back to at one point. So essentially what we did find was people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s are moving all across the country to our rural communities. And we interviewed these folks and did focus groups and surveys. We're academics, right? So we partnered up with Nebraska and we started to ask people in the midst of all these places undergoing population decline. So again, the sign outside of town looks like your population's going down, but we had people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s moving in. And we asked them, why did you move here? You know, and the top three reasons people gave were, number one, it was a slower pace of life. Mm-hmm. They wanted amenities. They wanted, quote unquote, life on their time again. They wanted control over the commute, control over, you know, where the commute is measured, where miles are the same as minutes, in a sense.
Yeah.
And that was by far the top reason, was to kind of control this safety and or the slower pace of life. Number two reason was safety and security. Mm-hmm. That was especially high with people with kids. And the top third reason was the low cost of housing, which we have in spades in many of our rural communities, again, relatively speaking. So we had these people moving in. They're bringing jobs with them. They're buying businesses. They're 1099 workers. They're self-employed. They're farmers. Essentially, they've got jobs in every industrial category that we found. And we had, you know, kind of the idea here is the narrative about rural, I believe, is so negative it hinders people even seeing rural places as a viable place that they can move to.
Right.
When in fact, the idea here is that I could never be a, you know, book editor in Clontarf, Minnesota, where essentially there is a book editor in Clontarf, right? I mean, so the idea here is not that you cannot be those things. It's that you can be a blank in rural America and fill in that blank with every job, with every occupation.
Yeah.
Now, you might not be able to find every job in every town. But when you put together 3 to 5 counties in any rural area, you find a very diverse economy. In many ways, you find an economy just as diverse as that as you find in an urban area.
Mm-hmm.
So we had an economist here in Minnesota, and he called it spatially separated neighborhoods is what rural communities are. So just think of rural communities as kind of these spatially separated neighborhoods.
Yeah.
They're separated by, you know, miles, and you need a vehicle, but you live in the middle of everywhere.
Well, you know what? I obviously live in a major metro area now, but I grew up in a medium-sized town in Oregon, and my parents will be thrilled to hear this. I've been feeling the pull back there for exactly the reasons, Benjamin, that you've been talking about. But when we come back, we'll talk to someone who's living right now in a small town in Iowa and why she chose that and what quality of life it brings to her. So this is part 4 of our special series, Where We Call Home, and we are talking about small towns in America and what they have to offer and why in some places, as Benjamin Winchester says, they're seeing a brain gain. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour is part 4 of our special series, Where We Call Home. And we're taking a look at small towns in America and whether some of them, contrary to popular national narratives, whether some of these small towns are actually experiencing a brain gain rather than a brain drain. We're joined today by Benjamin Winchester. He's a sociologist and senior research fellow at the University of Minnesota Extension studying rural America. And joining us now is Krista Loft. She is an administrative assistant and safety coordinator for the town of Bancroft, Iowa. Bancroft has a population of 732. That was as of the 2010 census. And she joins us from Bancroft, Iowa. Krista Loft, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Let me ask you, you didn't grow up in Bancroft, right?
I did not, no. Oh,
okay, so tell us a story of how you ended up moving there.
So I grew up in another small town in Iowa called Sioux Rapids, about the same size. But through FFA in high school, I met the son of a farmer from this area, and we got married after high school and moved here after college.
And so was this sort of in your life plan before you ended up moving to Bancroft?
Well, I had planned on staying in a small town. I thought it would be my hometown. But since the family farm comes first, this ended up actually being a great fit.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. You know, journalists in Iowa have written about Bancroft, and they describe it as a community that's actually close-knit and doing really well. So what is it that you think are the strengths of your town?
We're almost like an kind of a hub area for the northern part of the county. We are just a little bit more active or a central point for the small towns around us. We have a lot more businesses than I thought we would have when I moved here. So we have over 50, and that includes some home-based businesses, but we have activities like we are a baseball town. It's part of our heritage, and every summer we have our Bancroft Bandits that come to town, and they play for the whole season.
Wow. Now, when you say baseball towns, because there's Bancroft Memorial Park there, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's collegiate, the Pioneer Collegiate Baseball League? Or I want to be sure I have that right.
Yep, that's perfect.
Okay.
That's it.
Great. And so what about, so you say there's a lot of healthy, locally owned businesses. And what about for your kids? Are they able to go to school in town, or do they have to go out of town for school?
Sure. So in town, we have, it's called Kid Stop, and it's only daycare and preschool, third and fourth preschool. And then in our area, there's three other schools that are about 15-minute drive away that we can choose from to send our kids to through high school.
Okay. So that's working out for you.
Yep.
Okay, great. Well, I'm wondering, it sounds like you're really happy there, Krista, but is there anything that Bancroft is lacking that you wish it did have?
Well, if you ask pretty much anyone what our town needs, they might tell you we need a car wash, or a dentist office would be great to have back in town. But really, other than that, we kind of have everything we need here.
Mm-hmm. Well, Krista, hang on here for a second, because I want to turn back to Benjamin Winchester. Benjamin, what do you hear in how Krista describes living in Bancroft and what she likes about it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say it's typical, but because everybody's story is fairly unique. But essentially, you know what she talks about, the hub, the region, like how many businesses there are. I think people have the kind of this idyllic view of what small towns should look like. And when they don't look like that, they think there's not a small town there, when essentially it may look different. But, you know, I really appreciate what she said about kind of working as a hub there, because essentially, you know, nobody lives and works and shops and plays in just one town. Nowhere, really. I mean, this isn't Little House on the Prairie. We've got horse and buggy here. We've got vehicles and we travel around. And essentially I commented that we live in the middle of everywhere. We do. You live in one place, you work in another. Kind of the aspects of life that we really appreciate in these rural surroundings, that you've got so much accessible within a short amount of time from your home. When I say short amount of time, I mean 15, 20, 30 minutes, you know, just like in an urban place. So essentially what we've got is this really diverse landscape in terms of what we've got to do, places to go, opportunities, but they all may not exist in your town. So yeah. Recognizing the value of a regional asset is important.
But on the other hand, I'm seeing a report here that says that Bancroft, as wonderful as it might be, has actually lost more than 30% of its population between 1980 to 2010, one of the largest decreases for a rural community in Iowa. And it's the current population is the smallest it's been since the town was incorporated in 1881. So it still might be a great place to live, but the population continues to decline. How do you square those two?
Yeah. So thanks for asking. This is actually a very interesting area of research I do, and I call it the total population infatuation, that we tend to think that a measure of success or failure in our towns is measured by the number of people we've got. When in fact, if you look at the number of housing units, they stay relatively stable. So even in Bancroft, where you lose that percentage of your population, the number of housing units has only went down by a small percentage. And really what happens is, in 1940, the average household size was 3.6. And today it's 2.6. So essentially, when you see population loss, a lot of times it's because of household restructuring. Mm. So instead of having four kids in your house, you've got two. So imagine a town of 100 people in 1940. A town with 100 100 homes, those 100 homes would be home to, you know, 367 people in 1940. But today it's going to be down by 29% solely because of household size. So you go from 367 people to 267 people. And obviously, if you use, you know, total population as a measure of success, you're a big failure,
right?
Essentially. But when you look at the number of occupied homes, they're relatively stable. So a lot of times, you know, one of the big teachings I've gotten that we want to, you know, get the word out that we've discovered through extension here is that maybe there's a better mechanism to understanding our population than total population. Let's look at our housing units, which is why I think programs like this really help to bring up the role that housing units have in the health of our community.
Right. That is so fascinating. And Benjamin, I want to come back to that in a second here. But Krista Loaf, let me turn back to you before I have to let you go here. Do you imagine, I mean, I think your kids are young, right? But as Benjamin was saying earlier, maybe one of the greatest assets of small towns is that kids might grow up and move away, but then they'll have somewhere to come back to. I mean, what do you imagine or hope for your kids' future?
Right. I really do hope that they find a job close by or in town, or they go to the farm and then eventually they can come back to town. It's really kind of where the family is.
Yeah. Well, Krista Loaf joining us from Bancroft, Iowa. Thank you so much, Krista.
Thank you.
Well, let's take a couple of calls here. Let's go to Martin, who's calling from Yorktown, Virginia. Martin, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just calling to make the comment. I guess I don't live in quite a small town after listening, more of a suburban small area in Yorktown, Virginia. I've lived in some major cities throughout the United States, and the economist on the network or online, he has hit it right on the head as far as safety, amenities, a good place to raise a child. And the one thing that I find that we do have lacking is culinary diversity. Mm. We do not have a lot of different restaurants to choose from that are of different cultural backgrounds.
Right.
But I do enjoy living in a small town and raising my family in Yorktown, Virginia. Thank you.
Well, Martin, thank you so much for your call. Benjamin Winchester, what would you say to Martin?
Yeah, I think we do tend to have that. We lived in the small town of Hancock, Minnesota, which is about 770 people here for a long time. And we had Buddy's Bar and Grill in town there. And while we loved Buddy's Bar and Grill, it wasn't the only restaurant we wanted to go to when we wanted to eat out. So essentially, we would roam the landscape and go from Starbucks to Alexandria to Wilmer. And, you know, you really got to know the region and to enjoy some of the things that you've got in the wider neighborhoods out there. I don't think it's been cost effective for a lot of these small kind of cafes and whatnot to stay open, which is why we see more, you know, multimodal businesses where you've got a, you know, the gas station slash C store slash car sales slash haircutter slash deli on the corner. And essentially that becomes your culinary diversity in some of the very smallest towns. When we're talking about regional centers, I think you do see a pretty considerable uptick in the availability of some of these retail establishments.
Well, you know, it seems to me that there's a market opportunity, right, for an entrepreneur who might want to bring some culinary diversity to one of these small towns where there's a desire for it. So,
right.
Well, let's go to Patricia, who's calling from Chautauqua, Kansas. Patricia, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Patricia. Go ahead.
I live in a very small town, probably less than 1,500 people, and I moved here. I've lived in major cities all my adult life, Chicago, L.A., Detroit, Portland, Oregon, and Kansas City. And I just got tired of feeling like I had to carry a gun every time I mowed my yard. I got tired of the crime and the violence and listening to gunshots during the night and being afraid to come home after dark. And so I moved to a smaller town, and it was a big decision because I had a beautiful historical home in Kansas City that was on the National State Historical Register. But I have so loved this. It takes me about 45 minutes to an hour to go to a town like Joplin, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
to do major shopping, or to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I love the neighbors. I have a couple behind me that's been married 72 years, a lady on the other side of me that's 82 years old. Children ride their bicycles and have fun. I teach yoga twice a week. It's just absolutely quiet and peaceful. I bought The property's affordable. I bought a lovely little bungalow, which I'm totally redecorating. That the price was just unbelievable. So it's just peace and quiet.
Yeah.
And I'm so appreciative of it.
Well, Patricia, thank you so much for your call. Benjamin Winchester, Patricia seems to be telling a firsthand account of a story you were mentioning to us earlier in the hour, that the people moving to small towns are 30s, 40s, 50s and older.
Right. They've been moving in since the 70s.
Yeah.
When we started to write about this, they're like, wow, this is really fascinating. This must be new. And as we look back on the data, we found out it wasn't all that new and that essentially there weren't a lot of publications on it. And again, why? Why are people not covering kind of these positive aspects about what's going on in our small towns? Mm-hmm. Especially when, you had mentioned Pew Research Institute did a study a couple years ago here that asked people like, we know that just 20% of you live in a rural place, but if you could live anywhere, where would you want to live? And small towns and rural places were the number one choice people had. But why don't they? You can view it as market opportunity here. There's a big gap here between people that do and people that could or would. And I would argue in many ways that the narrative is so negative, people think they couldn't. But honestly, on the data side, we do find pretty regularly that our housing stocks are filled up.
Right.
You can't just build houses because you want them. You have to build houses where there's income. So essentially, we're in a waiting game right now for housing to open up in our rural communities, and it will be open over the next 25 years as our seniors and our baby boomers start to leave their homes. We've got 14 million homes right now that are going to turn over. The Tom Brokaw's greatest generation, 14 million of those million folks are current homeowners now. They're going to be moving out. That's almost a third of our rural homeowners are going to be turning over in the next 10 years.
Mm.
So we've got a huge opportunity here as these people move out. And Fannie Mae's been writing about this too. And there was just an article in The Economist called "Cheer Up Millennials." It may be easier to buy a house because essentially the houses aren't open right now. Seniors are staying in their homes for quite a long time. And we've got many age-in-place kind of models out there, which ultimately keeps people in their home, which may not be the best thing for their house long-term. So essentially, when we're looking forward, like how welcoming is our town? Are we ready to welcome in this, new generation of rural homeowners?
Right.
We do. We see towns all over there doing this. But really, our housing stocks are filled up. But they're going to be emptying out here over the next 25 years.
Benjamin, I'm really appreciating hearing sort of the bigger picture story about what's truly happening in America's small towns in this day and age, or in fact, for the past many years. But I also want to resist the what is also an American urge, and that is to totally romanticize small town life here. So let me just dig a little deeper into some of the things that are challenging for small town living in America, perhaps now more than ever. And one of them in particular you talked about we've been seeing decade after decade of hospital consolidation, for example. So when it comes to getting, basic or even specialized health care, a very important thing for Americans, is it not true that it can be much more of a challenge in small towns?
Oh, it is. Most definitely is. We had our first child when we had lived in Hancock in the local hospital. We didn't even have a pediatrician in town. We didn't have one until we moved closer to a metropolitan area. So there are definitely our challenges. We've got birthing centers that close in northern Minnesota. So if you want to have a baby, it's a 2.5-hour drive, which that baby better not be coming right now. And you better be, heading down the road at a good rate of speed to get there in time. So, challenges. But,
yeah. Isn't that more of an issue, especially, say, if you're a retiree or one of those aging baby boomers who may need to use medical services more often as you get older?
Oh, right. Right. So then in the older population, definitely. If you're starting to approach anything related to a continuum of care need, then you're going to be probably approaching regional centers more so, which, across this country, we do have a lot of rural regional centers, which can be economic aggregation points. But at the same time, it becomes a hub within which this larger region lives. So we've got folks that live in this large region. So while any one town may not have every hospital, when you do have it within a reasonable driving distance, that's acceptable. But ultimately, when you do have a lot of folks who start to need medical care, they're going to be moving to the regional centers. And then do you have housing available to them? Do you have the other amenities that people may need in terms of part-time care or preparing meals? And so this becomes actually a huge opportunity for our small towns. There have been studies out there that show that the public costs of residing seniors in your community is much lower than trying to, you know, be a home for a family, which a lot of people, you know, we're trying to attract families, but ultimately families bring with them higher transportation costs, schools. I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive in terms of like what you would want for your town. But ultimately, yes, it costs your town more to have a family, but ultimately the town benefits economically in a broader way than with just those seniors.
We've got to take a break here in just under a minute. But I mean, if I may demonstrate some more population infatuation, Benjamin, I'm also wondering if the people who are moving, as you've been describing, back into small towns, one of the questions for the vibrancy of that town is, are they bringing jobs with them, for example? I mean, if we're talking about entrepreneurs maybe in their 30s, 40s, and even 50s. But are they bringing enough jobs as it's older people moving in? I guess, is that one of the reasons why people have that population infatuation?
Right. So as we look to, you know, improve our towns, as we look to the population as an indicator for success, we do need to look at kind of the structures of our economy, not just in that town, but in the region. So people are bringing with them their economic networks. They're bringing with them their jobs, not in as high a numbers as we would like. But essentially, in many of our rural communities, we do have this opportunity for a low overhead business.
Well, you know, when we come back from a break, we're going to talk to a mayor of one of those communities. So Benjamin Winchester, hang on here for just a second. This is part four of our special series, Where We Call Home, and we're talking about small town life. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's part four of our special series, Where We Call Home. And this hour, we're looking at small towns in America and whether some of them are actually experiencing a brain gain. We also have a lot of comments coming in online. Lisa Lindsay says, I choose rural, which is very different from being rural for generations. We checked out of city life. Our kids will need to follow their passions, and that's okay. Ruth Chaddock Bernstein says, I have lived in rural Vermont my whole life, and I love it. I'm frustrated, though, with the media and politicians who continually talk about our declining school populations. It's actually untrue in our own town. And Mitch C. says, I moved back to Iowa my last couple of years of high school. Everyone dressed the same, jeans and a shirt. To be different in Iowa is to set yourself up for ridicule or ostracism. I only visit grudgingly because I still have family there. Well, let's turn now to the mayor of a small town in America. John Manchester joins us. He's mayor of Lewisburg, West Virginia, population officially 3,830. That's the number that appears on the 2010 U.S. Census, but the number of people who live in Lewisburg, West Virginia has been growing. Mayor Manchester, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about Lewisburg, West Virginia. What kind of town would you describe it as?
It's a classic small town that's dealt with the challenges of living in a post-Walmart world and in the midst of an Amazon world. You have to reinvent yourself, and we reinvented ourselves several years back as a tourist town. We have 10 independently owned restaurants in our downtown, and I tell people, you know, you can screw up a lot as a mayor as long as people do food right in your downtown.
Yeah.
We have concentrated on what makes us, what the assets are in our community. And we are a historic town, and we've allowed a good space and a safe environment for people to build their entrepreneurial dreams.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I'm seeing here that in terms of the building the entrepreneurial dreams, that also Lewisburg is a relatively affluent community in West Virginia, that its average level of educational attainment is higher than the rest of the state. Is that true?
That's right. We have the highest percentage per capita of terminal degree people in the state, and that allows you to people your boards and commissions with people who are very sharp and incisive and helpful for the growth and development of the city. And it keeps you also on your toes as an elected official, because people are looking over your shoulders to make sure you're doing your job right.
So it sounds like things are working there in Lewisburg, that the number of people living there has been growing. I quoted that number from the 2010 census. How much more is it now than 3,830?
It's somewhere over 3,900 now. Small but steady population growth.
Okay. And so what would you say particularly is going well there? What's the sort of secret sauce, if I might put it that way?
Well, we create an environment for younger people to move back in and do their entrepreneurial thing. We have a new relatively new brewery in town and a new distillery in town, and all the restaurants and shops are catered to millennial folks as well. So it is a people recognize and have traveled and have seen what has worked in other places and have taken some of those best ideas and brought them back. The goal of a mayor is to basically say, well, how can we make that work and how can we try and make that happen, as opposed to say, oh, we've never done that before. Why should we even try?
Yeah, so a willingness to try new things. But have there been obstacles or challenges in that willingness, perhaps even from, you know, sort of the regulatory structure provided by the state in terms of what you can do, even in your own small town there, Mayor Winchester, or Manchester,
sure.
Excuse me.
Yeah, sure. We are a new home rule community, and the state in West Virginia regulates what cities and towns in the state can do to a great extent. So we went after a different classification of cities so that we could do something as simple as be able to offer Sunday brunch, so that people who have traveled and are visitors are, I guess, used to having a mimosa or a Bloody Mary at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday with their meal. Not something that I grew up with, but if it's attractive and builds a little business excitement for that, we were able to get that passed. And we've seen some growth in all our restaurants downtown who offer that.
Well, John Manchester, Mayor of Lewisburg, West Virginia. Mayor Manchester, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Meg.
Well, Benjamin Winchester, back to you here. What did you hear in John Manchester's story about sort of the willingness to try new things, which it seems like they're doing in Lewisburg, West Virginia, but also some of the challenges to implementing new ideas in the small town?
Yeah, I think it's all about kind of recognizing and acknowledging the fact that your community is changing and finding ways not to just work with the people that are there, but the people who have yet to be there that may be looking to move there, actually. So, you know, I think what he says about, you know, ensuring that there's opportunities for the young people to come back to and do something, to actively talk about this in positive ways. When in many ways, when we talk about millennials, you know, we hear the word entitled or, you know, snowflakes and just all of these words that just do not really provide a positive atmosphere, not just for the people that are looking to move there, but for the people that already exist there. And I really like the idea of civic engagement, too, is very high amongst these people moving into our rural communities. They tend to see it as a value that they've got in their life. And what we find is that, you know, the number of active people in our small towns is through the roof. They may not always be going to John's meetings, but they may be going to some meeting somewhere in that community. So, and I think, you know, he had mentioned, too, that, you know, not telling people you don't want to try something, or again, on the point of, like, if people do have an idea, you're not like, oh, we tried that 30 years ago and it never worked. Like, How do you provide a kind of positive atmosphere for community development near town? It sounds like he's got the right levers.
Yeah. You know, as we explore this issue, I want to once again return to the my desire to not romanticize small town life, or quite frankly, romanticize any aspect of American life in small or large towns here. Because we're getting a lot of comments online, and I'm going to go to the phones here as well, about the question of homogeneity in rural or small towns in America. For example, Aaron Fountain says, I couldn't live in a small town because I found some to be very unwelcoming if it's racially homogeneous. Seeing other people of color is important to me, and as is a diversity of thought. Aaron says, again, not trying to bash small towns, but I don't think you can discount the factor of race. Well, on that point, let's go to Leah, who's calling from Columbia, Missouri. Leah, you're on the air. What do you think about this question of homogeneity in small towns in America?
Hi. Yes, I just want to say I love your show, and I just think you're a fantastic host. But I just wanted to say that it's I'm originally from Washington, D.C., and I did my Ph.D. in Atlanta. So I've lived in pretty big towns, very big towns. And it was a really... it was a shock. It was a shock to come to such a small, and it's not even that small compared to some of the towns that people have been talking about. But it was very small. It's very monolithic in terms of race and religion. And I've found it very spellifying and kind of upsetting to actually be the person that is the diversity for Caucasians in this town.
Hmm.
Yeah, it just feels limiting. I'm actually moving really soon, and it's in part because, yeah, it's been really depressing, and I would actually argue that after the election of Donald Trump, I have felt a lot of underlying hostility, not consistently or overwhelming, but just some kind of unpleasant and sometimes even nasty a sensation that I'm not welcome.
Wow. Well, Leah, thank you so much for your call and for sharing your personal experience here. Let's get another call on this issue. Mohammed is calling from New York City. Mohammed, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi. I love your show, too, Meghna. And I just wanted to more or less support what I think her name is Leah.
Leah, yeah.
Just call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that is that when Tom mentioned the... sort of the idea that these small towns are kind of like miniature utopias. As an African American, I think that it's a fantasy that there's restrictive covenants and a redlining. That even though there was federal law against that, I think it was passed in the 60s. Realtors find a way around that. And also, when Tom made the comment that Brokaw's book of sort of, an idealistic outlook on what America and small town is like, the point that I'd like to make is that that was in the, that was when Jim Crow was crescendoing. I just wanted to push back a little bit on those notions. Yeah.
Mohammed, I'm going to take it back for a few minutes, and sorry to have to interrupt you there, but your phone line's actually getting a little tough to hear. But Mohammed, thank you so much for your call. Benjamin Winchester, as you can see, we've got a lot of comments and callers who want to take on this issue of the monolithic nature of rural America or small town America, and their concerns about that, the homogeneous nature. What's your say? What's your take?
Yeah, welcome to the present day change. I mean, 100 years ago, it was, what are these Germans doing in my town? And then what are these Lutherans doing in my town? I think there's always been there's always been some nuance here that we struggle with and that we overcome. But essentially, we do find a way to move forward. So I just let folks know that be a part of this change. We hear pretty consistently from these brain gainers moving in that they say that despite the negative language in town, they say this is my town now. They're going to move forward and forge ahead with making this place their home now. There are networks of people that that congregate and do things together and tend to be exclusionary, but I would argue that's true just about everywhere. We're human beings and we live in patterns of regular habitual behaviors, and when it's sometimes difficult for people to break out of that. So I think small towns have come a long way. I think the mayor mentioned earlier about educational achievement. I mean, I just want want to remind you that just 60 or 70 years ago, less than half of the country had a high school degree. And today we're over 90, 94%. I mean, we should be extremely proud of the progress we've made in this country. And I've seen in rural communities here in Minnesota, too, alike the LGBTQ community actually doing quite well and thriving in many of our rural communities that initially on first glance, you may think, I would never stand a chance here. So I think it's easy to let appearances kind of deceive you, but I would argue it's not all or nothing here. Mm. It's not, you know, it's not on one end or the other. It's not all this idyllic, you know, small town is great, and neither is small town just this death spiral where right. you're taking a right turn into the ditch every week.
Benjamin, though, if I can just explore this a little bit further with you, because when we're talking about what are the things that may draw people to smaller towns in America, just referencing back that the Pew study that we were talking about earlier, they asked a question of folks saying, and they came up with this number of the percent of residents in rural, suburban, or urban areas that say that, you know, their neighbors have the similar values to them, right? And in right. rural areas, it was 73% of people said that their neighbors had similar values to them. And contrast that with urban areas, it was down to 41% there. So I'm just wondering if that sense of similarity for some people is actually part of the draw, the homogeneity and or the lack of diversity even.
Yeah, right. I mean, it would be kind of around the big sort, right? I mean, are we just sorting ourselves out into finding like-minded people? I don't think it's true necessarily. We see a variety of people moving in, maybe more perceptual, where you think everybody is like me because we're all here. But essentially, you're not walking into their living room. I mean, there's the old adage that you know everybody in your small town. You don't. People do lock their doors. I think we're filled with an idea of what rural is without a real good grasp on what it actually exists as in modern day society.
Well, let's get a couple more callers here. Let's go to Stephen, who's calling from Collinsville, Alabama. Stephen, you're on the air.
Yes, I live in a town where my mother's family goes back to the 1840s, a town of 1700. We have a thriving Chinese restaurant, two thriving Mexican restaurants. The boys won the state soccer championship in 2013, and so it has some problems about halfway between Chattanooga and Birmingham. But it seems to be muddling its way through and have an interesting history association. I mean, some of the matrons still buy the Daughters of the Revolution history of the Civil War, and that's a problem, but we're working on it. So just wanted to report from Collinsville. Thank you.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much for your call. Let's turn now to Jack, who's calling from Spokane, Washington. Jack, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to say that, and you've touched on a little bit here in the last few minutes, but I grew up in a small town about a little more than 2 hours from Seattle, a little more than 2 hours from Portland. It's a little logging town about 20 minutes from the entrance to Mount Rainier National Park. And like growing up there as a kid, it was idyllic. I was outside all the time, hiking, camping, all that kind of stuff. Went to this small high school and we did know everybody. And from a kid's perspective, it was pretty idyllic. And as an adult, going back now, I can see the problems that exist with, the economic disparities between the people who are sort of stuck there by uh-huh. geography and their socioeconomic status, and people who move in and think that they know, what the area needs without like understanding some of the underlying economic and social dimension. We have a really bad, meth problem in our area.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I didn't know this until I was out, but we had the highest, our part of the state had the highest teenage, I don't know how you put it, but highest percentage of like teenage pregnancies
yeah.
in the state, the ratio. I mean, so it's wonderful, but I think that part of the reason it was wonderful is because I had this stable family.
Right.
Jack, everything was good.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm running out of time here, so I want to be able to give Benjamin Winchester a chance to respond. Jack, thank you for your call. Jack basically saying that he has two different views of the same town or area that he grew up in. One through the child's eyes and one through adult's eyes. And what do you think about that?
Right. Kudos to the parents for not letting the kids, define their community by what may be a challenge. Everybody's got challenges. I don't know any town that doesn't. I think what differentiates one town from another, what differentiates one person from another, is how you deal with your problems. And when in our rural communities, we tend to have higher levels of social capital. We have this bridging that goes on. We tend to meet together. Our kids congregate together. I mean, there's forced interaction amongst classes, right? You've got the rich kids going to school with the poor kids, and they're forced to interact. And this is actually a really positive thing. And there's a reason why a lot of the kids in the Midwest, in our rural communities, tend to end up at a higher socioeconomic status than their parents. It's because we tend to bring up these values and these kind of challenges in ways that doesn't let it prohibit us from viewing the future of our town.
Yeah, well, Benjamin Winchester, sociologist and senior research fellow at the University of Minnesota Extension, studying rural America. Benjamin, it's been such a pleasure to have you. Thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Meghna.
And folks, this was part four of our special series, Where We Call Home. Go to onpointradio.org and take a look at parts one through three. It's been a terrific series. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.